Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name's Will, and this is Leon. We're going to tell you a bit about the network we've built for you guys.
The first thing I need to say, actually, is that we are not responsible for running events.ccc.de.
So networking does involve a lot of terminology and acronyms and strange words and stuff like that. So we developed a new item of terminology, the concept of the sauna. And this is various buildings that are all around, various rooms that are all around this building, and we put network equipment in them. And they get very hot. These are some infrared camera photos of some comms rooms. You can see, there's quite some heat generated in there. It was a bit of a problem.
We're basically running on the limits there because those rooms aren't designed to host a network of that size. We have 10 gigabit equipment everywhere and lots of it. And the building just wasn't designed for that. So it's pretty warm in those rooms.
Here's a graph of some of the temperatures. We collect lots and lots of data, numbers and things. This is produced in graphite. And it's very easy for us to just kind of have a quick graph of the top temperatures, which go up to 50 something degrees C. These are degrees C, not Fahrenheit or Kelvin.
At one point, we had to move our servers to another room, which has an airco, because after we closed the door, the graph climbed above 55 degrees, which wouldn't be good for the hardware. But the equipment handled these temperatures really well, actually.
So we didn't have 100 gig E this year. For 30C3, we had 100 gig E, and you guys didn't actually bother to use it properly. So we left that equipment in the demo stock, and we just took 10 gig E. It's quite easy for us to do multiple 10 gig E wavelengths over the single fiber we have that comes into the building. So we did that. The unused uplink bandwidth is too damn high. You guys peaked about 16 gig out. It's relatively similar to what we've had in previous years with increasing amounts of, especially inbound IPv6, not much outbound IPv6.
So the setup we're running this year is pretty much the same as last year's. So it's tried and well tested. The core network runs on hardware from Juniper that we get in a loan, mostly MX240 and MX80 routers. And for the distribution network, we run on EX series switches. We're running an MPLS VPLS core network, so we can have the routing distributed and still have some networks in a central place like we need for the DHCP server and stuff. That's basically the same network as last year. So it wasn't that much work because we had the configs ready, we had everything. We could steal most things from last year.
Yeah, while we tend to throw away the actual data that gets accumulated in the logs during Congress, we do keep the configs. So if we've used that hardware before, that makes life a lot easier for us, the various tools and scripts we've developed. Sorry about this diagram. It's the network got rather larger, and so the diagram also got more complicated. We have various Juniper MX and EX distributed around the building and over the in-building fiber.
So what you can see here is on the right hand side, these are our upstream providers, which are various ISPs that just offer to sponsor a single 10G link or a 20G link. And altogether, these are that's an uplink capacity of 50 gig this year. And also on the right hand side is our router in the data center, which we run that fiber to from the building. And then the rest of that map is basically just the patch rooms inside these buildings with various routers and switches.
So we had a colo, same as every year. It is for computers with 1 gig and above network connections. We had around, actually it was 80 to 100 machines in the colo. I'll show you some photos in a minute, and it was using about 15 kilowatts, which is quite a lot of heat. It was obviously nice and warm and cozy in there because we had this ticket from the NOC help desk guys over here where someone had decided to sleep in the colo. And then and then left his sleeping equipment there and wondered, well, we did not cleanse this hellish place and remove it, but someone obviously did. So sorry if you're in the audience and you're looking for your stuff. Don't know. The colo is for machines, really. we had a much better layout this time. It does kind of turn into a bit of a carbon salad. Cable salad, you know, we were able to kind of make things a bit better. It's actually in the balcony of Sal 3. Yeah.
You can see it in the background on that picture.
Yeah. This picture is a bit dark because, well, hackers like darkness, right? You can see the blinking lights. Yeah. Big pile of machines. So we had some interesting topical kind of discussions on Twitter with people. I remember a few years ago, someone said, "Oh, Congress has more capacity available than the whole of Africa," and now people this year say, "Oh, Congress has more better network than North Korea." And well, this is true. We don't think this is something that's particularly funny. Most of us in the NOC are professional internet engineers, and we think if it's a really sad state of affairs if we can build a better network than for a whole country. So hopefully we'll continue to have a good network, but maybe some other countries will too in the future.
On the plus side, Africa is catching up, so
definitely,
we don't have more capacity than Africa anymore.
Yeah. this was actually, we did some sort of fun analysis of where traffic between Congress and North Korea was going, but there wasn't much traffic. It was below the sampling error of our measurements, so maybe it wasn't only just due to this really circuitous route where packets were going, you know, the whole width of the United States and across the Pacific to get to North Korea, but there we go. So, wireless.
Wireless. This year we're running on Aruba equipment. We had two controllers with 10G uplinks. It's a lot much larger setup than last year's. We've had I think 72 access points last year, and this year we're on 125. 115 of these are actually serving clients, so these are the ones you connect to, and the other 10 are just air monitors, really, that we use in high density areas like these lecture halls. Which don't do anything else but measuring the air quality and the spectrum, so the controller can do more intelligent decisions about how to plan the wireless. Also, we had way more users than last year's. At 30 C3, we had 5,000 users in the wireless and peak times, and this year we peaked at 7,800. And that means an average of 68 clients per access point in average.
Which is kind of high, and we'll come on to that in a minute. An interesting thing is that not everyone is here or has devices connected, and we saw in the region of 20,000 unique devices, i.e. that's about two devices per attendee, I guess. So people come and go from Congress. And the peak traffic was about 3 gigabit on the wireless, which is a fair bit. We had some interesting graphs, because we collect numbers. I don't have a... we collect numbers, but not your data. This is, I don't have a pointer, but basically, if you look at this large purple graph here, this is actually the number of users in Saarlinz in Hall 1. And then obviously the talk finished here, and they went, everyone goes out into this cyan sort of area, which is actually the foyer behind Saal 1. So everyone just walks out and their devices stay connected to the network, and then, oh, there's another interesting talk in Saarlinz again, so everyone goes back in again. And so we were actually using this in a knock. Hey, there's loads and loads of people in Saal 2. What is the talk there? We should go and see what it is.
This is a picture from the Fnord Newsshow, actually. So on the right hand side, it's when the Fnord Newsshow ended and everybody went home, basically.
Some of them went to the bar first, I think. Crypto. If you don't use the crypto we provide, then people will sniff your traffic. We had about 60% 802.1x WPA enterprise clients. That's where you enter basically a random username and password. This is what you should be using. Please do not use the unencrypted Wi-Fi. We do include it, for instance, for compatibility reasons, like you have some old hardware or Raspberry Pis and stuff like that. But if you persist in using the unencrypted Wi-Fi, then we can't help you, and your data will be sniffed, recorded, and sold. This time around, the encryption actually is terminated with the Aruba setup on the controller itself, which is stored somewhere safe in the building, which reduces the attack surface, because that means that the traffic is also encrypted all the way throughout the network as well, the wired network that the access points connect to. But yes, please use the encrypted stuff. We have some more graphs of the wireless.
This is actual traffic, like megabits per second, I think. You can see the times when hackers sleep. It's not actually in this graph, but we've measured the lowest number of users, I think at 7 and 8 a.m. So that's when the bottom of the curve is. So what you can see here is it's basically that we have a lot of traffic. That this is only Saal 1 and 2, Saal 1 and 2, so the main lecture halls. It's about 1.2 gigabits of peak traffic. And the thing is, what happens if you have this much traffic on the wireless? We have a pretty graph of this as well. It's pretty clear, isn't it? So this is the spectrum utilization. Basically, it's the airtime the antennas spend in sending data in percent. So basically, what you can see here is that it's completely full, mostly. It was more than 90% in all 5 gigahertz channels. So we're basically hitting physical limits of what's possible with doing over wireless. Or you are.
So what are we going to do in future with the wireless? Well, it, as we were just saying, it's a dynamic high-density deployment, especially in the main lecture halls, which is challenging but fun. We're probably going to need some more access points in greater in certain areas, which it was already a big increase this year from 72 to 125 access points. We need you guys to keep on buying 5 gigahertz equipment. 2.4 gigahertz only equipment is useless at Congress, and you might as well go home.
Yeah, you saw the colors in the previous graphs. There were many colors, and this is for the 5 gigahertz band. In the 2.4 gigahertz band, there are only 4 colors that we can use. So this is it's way harder and basically impossible to build a usable Wi-Fi in the 2.4 gigahertz band. So do buy 5 gigahertz hardware.
It does improve year on year, I think, as people replace hardware. 65% 5 gigahertz clients is we think you're getting there, so that's nice. So we had some problems with the network. It's never perfect. We had one of the Juniper virtual chassis. Well, it didn't literally explode. It is pretty warm in there, but it kind of fell apart and. We had to.
Yeah, at some point, well, the virtual chassis are basically single switches that we. Multiple single switches that we stack together, so they are one virtual switch. That's just one IP address we SSH into, and basically it's just one managed switch. And what happened at some point is that it basically fell apart. One of these single switches rebooted, and yeah, we don't really know what happened there. It might be a failed stacking cable, the ones we used to connect the switches together, but we didn't really investigate it. We might investigate it after the event, but we probably won't.
We had a bug which caused we talked about the router that is in the data center IPHH across town, we were enabling IPFIX, which is we're using this for flow monitoring. It's not for monitoring of your data, but it's we want to collect some data about where traffic is going on the internet, because the Congress network is actually part of the internet. We run our own autonomous system, and we like to adjust where the traffic goes and provide best performance. But anyway, we enabled this feature, and it caused the line card to hang, unfortunately, on the router in the data center. And we'd already built most of the Congress network at that time, and we were kind of slacking off already with a few beers. And then fortunately, we still had a designated driver at 2 a.m. because, I wasn't driving anywhere. And we had to drive across town. We had to drive across town and like get into the data center and adjust things.
Special thanks to the guys of the data center who stayed up until like 4 a.m. just to allow us access so we could reboot the router.
We had a few Wi-Fi problems. One of the things is there are these ETSI regulations that the access points need to detect 5 gigahertz radar. I believe it's weather radar. And what happens is the access points listen, and if they hear something they don't recognize, they shut up because they think, hey, there's some important weather radar here, so I won't transmit in this area. But we found this function was very sensitive, so we had to adjust the whole channel plan, and this was a bit of a problem. It meant we couldn't. We wanted to get more out of the network and couldn't because of this detection. And it's simply due to the amount of like electronic devices and general stuff going on at Congress, and it's just a function of the density here. So we'll be working with the vendor on that to improve things and maybe make this more tunable with time. So
we need to thank you, some companies basically who provide equipment and support so we can run this network, because
we can't rent
these amounts of gear.
We can't phone someone up and say, please can we pay you money for this? We're merely reliant on people's generosity. So.
Especially Juniper, who provided like I think 1.2 tons of equipment.
I think it was it 3 million euros of equipment,
yeah.
Insurance value?
Yeah, it's about 3 million euros of insurance value.
Yeah.
Also, that's not a company, but we really need to thank the people of the NOC help desk who keep a lot of work from us and.
We had a very great support from Aruba, we've already talked about Juniper. There's a German company called Flex Optics who have been really kind with supplying us optics for all kinds of events. These are the actual lasers, and we had hundreds and hundreds of these, like a very huge box, and they're very very kindly supplying that to us for free. We get a donated bandwidth from Atrato, Kaya, and KPN, so thanks for that. And then all kinds of other bits and pieces from people's closets and so forth to make the network work. But thanks to everyone, really. Now wash your hands. Does anyone have any questions?
Yes. So this talk's going to be a little different than all of the others you heard before. We're going to do questions after each section. So if you have questions, just run to one of the microphones. Be quick and brief so we can do as many as possible. So if anyone has a question, just run to one of those lighted spots, and we'll start with one from the internet, I think.
Indeed. There was a question about whether you know what the current market prices for 1 gigabyte of Congress data would be.
We haven't received any offers, so I have really no idea.
Okay, thanks.
All right, then I think we'll start with microphone two.
I just wanted to ask if you have numbers about NAT64 users.
Yeah, we do, but I'm not carrying them in my head.
Okay.
But if you come and talk to us afterwards, we can talk about that setup in more detail. We did have some various people contact us over the Twitter account who were using the NAT64 and some feedback on that. So we're going to continue with this at forthcoming congresses.
All right, microphone three.
Just so you can sleep safely, I'm one of the Infodesk coordinators, and we found this guy's sleeping mattress. He was searching for 4 days, and he quite got happy.
Okay, another quick question from the interwebs.
Yes. Yeah. There's a question about whether you had any fallback on the internet connection side of things.
Fallback. Do they mean security incidents or?
I think in terms of whether you had an additional line or something, I don't know.
Oh, I see. Yeah, we actually have to buy the fiber. I think we actually have to buy it for the whole year or something.
No, we're renting it for a month.
Well, it does cost quite a lot of money. So we for a 4 day event, we don't have kind of super dual paths out the building in case a digger comes. We'll probably use more equipment next time and have more resilience in terms of the equipment, but probably not in terms of the physical fiber due to the cost.
But talking about abuse, you can't tell me you didn't get any.
Abuse, right, yeah.
There were very few abuse complaints this year, I think. We had like 3 cases in which we did something. Otherwise, it's just automated stuff where people were port scanning and do less port scanning. It's really annoying.
Yeah, it just fills up the inbox, and someone has to close all those tickets in RT, where we figure out how to do this with MySQL. It's a nightmare.
All right, then microphone three, please.
Regarding the abuse, do you reject automatically mails from fail to ban, for instance?
We get them all, and we process them. It's difficult. We don't reject them automatically because we think that's kind of rude. We do, in theory, at least collect this data so we can look at it. But there's little we can do. We provide a service where if someone sends us an abuse complaint, we can guarantee they will never receive another packet from Congress ever again. So someone may phone up and they say, "Hey, I'm seeing this bad traffic," and we just say, "Well, we'll just put an access list on, and you'll never see us. You'll never hear from us again." And that seems to keep people happy.
Okay. And I had a quick other question. You mentioned you keep flow data. Did you check how much traffic was going through Tor?
No, we absolutely do not look at the protocol data.
I meant just by looking if people are contacting Tor nodes. List of IPs public.
We don't collect that information either. We don't collect IPs, we don't store that. We throw away data as soon as we can. We really have no interest in collecting data about your packets, other than this particular flow data I'm talking about is actually to on whole autonomous system basis, so it's the whole big ISPs. So we might know how many gigabits we did to Deutsche Telekom, but not how many to your DSL line in Deutsche Telekom, for instance.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, and then I think one last question at microphone two, please.
Are there any signs of spy agencies monitoring the network?
No.
That's a tough one. That's a tough one because we don't notice any. That's all I can say. If we had noticed anything, we would have taken action, but these people are good, right? So, too good.
Yeah, it's possible that, as we have a number of upstreams, that yes, something could be happening there. But it's outside the border of our network, so we don't know.
So just encrypt everything.
Yeah.
Twice.
Okay, then thanks Rock again to the Nock guys.
Rock 13 twice.
Okay, so we don't have any more questions. If you're done.
Nope, I'm done.
Who's coming up next?
I just need to unlock my laptop. Fengel, I think you're next.
All right, so you're going to talk about CERT, right? Or just take stuff.
It's on there, but they will.
We have done my.
We need a different screen.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Can you swap to the other? Yeah, so. There we
it's
go.
Good, yes. Good that we have the VOC guys all here.
Yes. Yeah, so I want to talk to you about the power network we have built up here in the Congress area for you to use it. So the building itself has not so much power outlets than Congress members here. So this table is mainly what we have supplied on each area. So in Hall 3, we had the biggest amount of power for you guys to use. In Hall H, also with the party area, they are using the power much in the afternoon. For the co-location, we had more than on mainly anything else. Yeah, our material we have used. You see the big amount of distribution boxes in the 16 amps, 32 amps, 63 amps, and 125 amps. The 125 amps is the first time in Congress we have used them. We needed them for the Hall 3, because the assembly team put all people together that wanted to use 3D printers, laser cutters, and other stuff at one spot of the hall. In total, we have installed 9,850 meters of cables, 673 power distribution boxes, and from our side, we had delivered 3,200 power sockets, but every assembly have bring their own power socket lines with them, and so I think it will be much more here. Yeah, we have first time we have measured the consumption in the halls, or in some halls. So Hall 3, for example, was 1,067 kilowatt hours, and in the co-location we have used 931 kilowatt hours. That's the consumption for the whole day. But we have to say, last year it was doubled. So we have, I think, a green Congress. Yeah, and I think it was from my side. I don't have any much to tell you because I don't have any data from the controllers or something like this.
So again, I don't know, would you mind answering questions if there are any other, any questions about power?
If
I don't
there
know.
Are.
Did we have any electrocutions? I don't think so.
No.
Might happen with those lines lying around everywhere. Okay, all right. So then please give it up for the Seitenstraße.
Okay.
So, hi, I'm Sebastian. I'm going to talk about Seidenstraße. Yeah, this year was a lot smaller than last year. We've only used 600 meters of tube. That's 100 meters less than last year. Last year we had 700. It took 8 days to set everything up. We had 4 to 7 hackers working on it almost full time. Those were the same guys who manned our Seidenstraße assembly, which we also had this year. And yeah, I'd like to ask for some applause for them, because I was none of them. And I couldn't come here until the 26th. And when I arrived here, everything was set up already. So that's quite impressive. And we also saw some new trends in building capsules. This year, we had way more LEDs. I had to photograph them all with LEDs off, because they were too bright and the hall is really dark. So otherwise, you wouldn't see the capsule. The capsules were also heavier. I think nobody cares anymore about our standardized weight limits. So because of a lot of LEDs, you need a lot of battery power in there. And I've seen quite a few 3D printed capsules, but most of them use 3D printed parts somewhere, or even parts from real pneumatic tube capsules that you can buy commercially, and they were sawed in half and adapted to our system, so that's really cool. So this year, we also tried to do some fancy crafts. we did not put up transmission logs as last year for people to file things manually, because that didn't work out too well. And the numbers just didn't add up in the end. So this year, everything was done by automatic capsule counters at the central node. And these are the data for the central node. The traffic was similar to last year. So this is the data from, I think, day one at 19 o'clock to just before the talk here. And we've got overall about 550 capsules that have been sent or received. And the fastest capsule was 14 meters per second, which is in a similar area than last year. And you can also see some peaks in this graph that might be interesting, because those peaks were when there were no talks and people had time to play with the Seidenstraße. Also, you can see the sleep times. Except for day one. In day one, we had a little bit of a power outage because someone unplugged the Zellrohr assembly and inserted a vacuum cleaner instead. We also experimented with auto routers. We tested some ideas here at the Congress. It all boils down to the tube is less flexible than the people building the outer routers expected beforehand. So we need more motor power on those things, and we don't have any standard routing protocol. So even if there was a working router, we would not know how to tell it where to route. We are somehow working on that. If anyone has good ideas, just write a mail to our mailing list, or even better, subscribe there. Which brings me to the last slide. So if you want to contact us with ideas, or if you want to help us with something, just go to IRC. We are on Hackend in the Seidenstraße channel. There's not much going on there over the year, but I'm usually there to respond. Also, we've got a mailing list that has a bit more traffic. It's a standard mailman setup, so just write empty mail with the subject subscribe to this address, and yeah, I guess you know the drill. Also, we are planning to do a Seidenstraße setup on the camp next year, which might actually be useful there and not just a toy. But we need a lot of more helpers to do this, because doing this by 8 or 9 guys is really a lot of work. And yeah, I guess we all want to enjoy the camp, so the more people help, the faster we are done. Also, short note here, if you want some Seidenstraße at home, you can get free tubes from us today. After we tear everything down, just call 4451, and then we'll get you some tubes. But you have to have some way to transport them home, so we can do that for you. And also, it would be nice if you would have some way to transport them to the camp, because we will need them there. So that's all from my side.
All right. Thank you, Seidenstraße. Just, I have a quick question. No flying Mate bottles this year?
No flying Mate bottles, no broken tubes, no special incidents.
All right, that's an improvement.
Wait, maybe one. There was a DDoS attack at my automated capsule counter. Somebody attached 2 meters of LED string to his capsule, and I counted like 300 capsules in less than 2 seconds.
Okay, we have a question over there.
Yes, about routing. Have you thought about MPLS over Seidenstraße?
So, I'm only a bit of a network guy. I'm not really sure what MPLS is about. But we've been discussing like doing IP-based stuff over Seidenstraße by using NFC tags and putting the packets on there.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, there's another question.
So you had a packet inspection point at some place near the Engel stuff. What was that about?
A packet inspection point?
Yeah, there was like a box in the tube, just at the ceiling.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that one. I saw that. but yeah, don't know.
Not
I'm not
even,
supposed
not
to tell you about that one.
Safe.
Or maybe we just find the agency surveillance stuff.
Yeah.
Just
maybe.
On the wrong network.
Maybe.
Okay, I think that's it from the Seidenstraße. Thanks again. And I think we only have the VOC left, so please.
Can we have. Yeah, thank you. So, hello, I'm Denimo. I'm giving a short report from the Video Operations Center. And please give big hands to our Winkelkatze again. And of course, other than her, there are quite a few other people involved. So who are we? We're actually not only C3 Walk, we are C3 Streaming, which comprises of the Video Operations Center of the CCC, the FEMEV and the AGS, who are both very much into video and helped us a lot, like every year. I guess it's actually new, and thank you for joining us. So we built this and we prepared this, and we improve on every conference that we go. But obviously, the Congress is like the most challenging conference, right? So we approach this in different teams. We have infrastructure, we have streaming and encoding, we have a team doing the website, we have post-processing and encoding, operations, subtitles. This is people working together in their groups and across groups. So this works pretty well, and we actually had a meeting a few days or a few weeks before this Congress to prepare everything in Berlin, where we actually put this together. So what's new this year? We had Video on Demand, which was really great because it was just supposed to be better, and it was really received extremely well, which is awesome, because it was better, but we had very, very little complaints anyway. For the first time, we have full HD in all the halts, including the Sendezentrum, in H.264 and VP8, so also free codec supported in high definition. Our release pipeline now supports release to YouTube, so everyone who doesn't manage to go to Media CC CD can now receive our content as well. Yeah, that's the amount of applause that's due. That's perfect. So subtitles in the room and on the web player, and actually we had great feedback there. I'll get to that in a separate slide. We had GoPro cams for presenting small objects. Like, it was a big problem in the last congresses when people had to show their tiny itsy bitsy hardware hacks, and we actually had to zoom in with our cameras from far away. So now we had GoPros that actually could catch this a lot better. We had backup recording with SSDs, which was really, really good because we actually needed them, and it helped us recovering quite some recordings that would have otherwise been lost. And we gradually improved other things like the content distribution networks and so on and so on. It's just really too much to count on, because it's just amazing what people do in this environment. And we have DVB-T. We actually have DVB-T broadcasting equipment in this hall. We have an official broadcasting license. So I think we didn't really announce this too much, but you could actually have watched a talk through DVB-T. How did this actually work? And it's actually surprising that you can you guys actually make out what this graphic reads? Okay, perfect. I wasn't sure if that would work out. So we actually start in the middle. So we have the camera sources and the slides, which come in via SDI into our mixer, where they are mixed live. You might have seen the awesome split screen view that we have courtesy of our hardware mixers that we had in all rooms for the first time this year. And when we go through encoding, we actually have two ways now. First, the way to the relays, and then the actual production line, where we actually cut and edit the videos and equip them with metadata a bit more, and actually produce all the other formats. We had an encoder cluster that encoded everything from the full HD master in Berlin. So we pushed everything through the network. So thank you, NOC, for providing us with the network that we had, because that was essential to get our service to the people. So thank you. And so just to finish the production line, we then push it to our CDN, which runs on Mirrorbrain, free software solution, and on YouTube. You guys who watch it live, you could see it through RTMP, through HLS, through basically the relays. We had master relays and edge relays, and we had one relay that would do the video on demand, because it would basically reuse the HLS snippets and serve them for you delayed viewing pleasures. So now for the subtitles. We had 40 angels helping and subtitling the talks. Up to 3 parallel tracks, and very good feedback from hearing impaired and deaf viewers. And the service was very popular with people that are not as fluent in either German or English. So those people actually get included as well, which is great. And for the usage peaks here, for the subtitles, the Fnord news show was 120 subtitles viewer, and Jacob's and Laura's talk was about 100 subtitles viewers, which is great. What else happened? The most remarkable thing, and you might have read things about washing hands, we had to learn the hard way. The downtime wasn't so much hardware. That works pretty well. I mean, if you have watched the streams, they were mostly reliable and very much reliable this year. This is the feedback that we got through most of the channels. But the downtimes were not like technical nature. We actually were the virus operating center. That's what people called us. We had 25 core people, and one afternoon, I think it was on day two, we had 9 people down within 4 hours. And mad props to CERT for helping us getting them fixed up again. Most of them are well again or on the way to recovery. So thank you, CERT. And as I mentioned, technically, DVB-T, because we were still testing it, was a bit flaky. It will be a lot more useful on the camp, I guess. And we had a short fronted outage because of a dependency on event CCCD. That was quickly fixed, and we were back online, and it only affected the front ends. People that were still watching, the streams could keep watching and were not disturbed. Yeah, stats. I mean, competing with the NOC in terms of stats is just useless, so I won't even try, but we have some. We delivered 80 terabytes of streams. video on demand, 9 terabytes. CDN 19K views handled by our Mirror network. The raw video material was 4.5 terabytes, and it was 184 hours of recording. And because we have to duplicate them for all the other formats, that amounts to almost 900 hours of video that needs to be processed by the cluster. Okay, I don't need to explain that. So yeah, but we actually had peak. We had a peak at almost 9K viewers, and at that time we were pushing out 10 gigabits of video and audio traffic. And another interesting thing, we also streamed the Sendezentrum. And no video on demand, because that was only established for the main rooms, and it turns out it may be a good idea to have that for Sendezentrum next year as well. What's amazing is we could actually see the NSFW late night show. We could actually see that they had 3K viewers, which is absolutely astonishing. So I thought that was worthwhile mentioning. And there was another strange thing. You know, we are great cat content lovers, and because of that, we have Winkelkatzen. And suddenly we were innocently idling and working away, whatever we were doing, and suddenly this happened. There was a larger-than-life Winkelkatze showing up at the VOC, and thank you to the donator. Okay, so this is basically it. finally, I would like you to give big hands to everyone who's helped making this happen, and this would not be possible without the people manning the cameras, manning the video mixers, and running like mad to get everything organized, so you and the people outside of this conference center can actually take part in this conference. Thank you, Video Angels. Okay, and if there are any questions?
All right, last question time again. Yeah, you had microphone two, go ahead.
All right, I'm wondering for DVB-T, do you know what the range was, or the power?
I'll give that to the expert.
So we planned with three transceivers, or no, senders, one in the Horus 3, one at the Garderobe Foyer, and one at, yeah, somewhere at between Hall 1 and Hall 2. We actually deployed only one in Hall 3 with receiving power of 500 milliwatts, so 1.5 watts, because the Bundesnetzagentur, it was easier for the Bundesnetzagentur only allow indoor coverage, and so it's much cheaper for us. Yeah, and it actually worked just today, so we had some problems there. Yeah, you see the headcount number down, was down on the Saturday, and it was kind of a beta test for the camp. Okay. So, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, we'll just go ahead with a question from the internet.
Sure. The internet just wants to give you guys a big shout out for providing the service and a big thumbs up. There was a question about whether you know the latency of the stream or.
It depends if you use RTMP or HLS. I think RTMP is faster, about 15 seconds, and HLS depends on your client.
All right, thank you. Microphone two, please.
Also about DVB-T, I was wondering if in what resolution you put that out, and if that will be HD content on the camp, at least.
So your question is about HD on DVB-T?
Yes.
Yeah, we will might do this on the camp. We didn't do this today or this year. Maybe using DVB-T 2 and so on, but we will see how this works. But in theory, you could also do HD on DVB-T 1. But only with fewer channels. So, yeah.
Okay, I think that's it. So please give a huge round of applause for all the people making this Congress possible.